And it's like everybody thinks AI, just because it's AI, it's going to simplify things, or it's going to reduce costs, or it's going to reduce headcount. And I feel like you really need to do a lot of due diligence when it comes to vetting AI technology and really figuring out and spending the time if it's the right fit.
They keep telling us that it's all over for HR. The age of AI is upon us, and that means HR should be prepared to be decimated. We reject that message. The future of HR won't be handed to us. Instead, it'll be defined by those ready to experiment, adopt, and adapt. Future-Proof HR invites these builders to share what they're trying, how it's going, what they've learned, and what's next. We are committed to arming HR with the AI insights to not just survive, but to thrive. Welcome to the Future-Proof HR podcast, where we explore how forward-thinking HR leaders are preparing for disruption and redefining what it means to lead people in a changing world. I'm your host, Thomas Kunjapu, CEO of Cleary. Today's guest is Jamie Rivero, HR Director at Michael Mechanical, Inc. A strategic global HR and operations leader, Jamie focuses on aligning human capital to business outcomes, building culture that drives performance while safeguarding compliance and risk. With experience leading transformation and fostering resilient teams, Jamie blends integrity, a clear strategic vision, and hands-on operational chops to deliver measurable results. Jamie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So tell me a little bit about your background and the scope and industry that you work at.
Sure. So I've been working in human resources for about 18 years. I've worked in grocery retail, healthcare, manufacturing and logistics, where I spent most of my career. And now about 6 months ago, I made the jump into construction, which has been definitely a change, but there's definitely some similarities in the manufacturing and from warehousing background. And I oversee all facets of HR. So from recruitment all the way up to talent development, full life cycle of employment.
That is a lot of different industries. I'm be excited to get into what's similar, what's different. But first, I'd like to ask you a little bit about how you've maybe moved across different companies with AI-driven cultures that are a little bit different, or attitudes towards AI and or technology. Can you tell me a little bit about these mindset shifts and what that means for you being an HR leader?
So I definitely have dealt with a stark difference in terms of attitude shifts towards AI. So my previous company was running towards AI at a very fast pace, which I am all for AI, but I feel like right now it's like a buzzword, and it's like everybody thinks, you know, AI, just because it's AI, it's going to simplify things, or it's going to reduce costs, or it's going to reduce headcount. And I feel like you really need to do a lot of due diligence when it comes to vetting AI technology and really figuring out and spending the time if it's the right fit. And where I'm at now, definitely not as running towards it that quickly, which is obviously a big difference, but I actually welcome it because I feel like you need to find the balance with AI. And I'm sure we'll jump into it a little bit more in terms of, you know, why that is and why that's a benefit.
So then what does that mean for you as an HR leader in your day-to-day when you have this? Because it's one thing for the business to have like an attitude or a certain culture around AI, but then what does that mean for you and how your daily rhythms are different?
Yeah, so AI definitely has hit HR as an industry very heavily. And it's a topic at all the conferences. I've been seeing it for the last couple of years. It's like most of the content at HR conferences is now AI. And where I feel like it's a little bit challenging is I feel like so much technology has flooded the space right now, but there hasn't been a whole lot of framework in terms of best practices on how to implement it. What are the implications of AI technology, especially from a legal and a compliance standpoint? And that's a lot of the feedback that I've heard at a lot of these HR conferences. It's like AI, but it's like, how do we actually implement it? What are the best practices? And I feel like maybe we ran a little bit too fast towards AI and we skip some of those steps. And I feel like a lot of companies are now trying to figure out all of that kind of legal and compliance aspect, which I think is really, really important. And for me, also, HR, there's a human aspect to it. And we can talk about later about the implications of when it's appropriate to use AI technology. But there's certain things in HR where I don't know that it's ever going to make sense for AI technology to be utilized. And that's something that I feel like as HR leaders, we really need to figure out. And I feel like also we also need to embrace AI technology. Like, I know there's a lot of people who are resistant to it because a lot of times when you hear AI, you think, you know, it's going to replace jobs and it's going to eliminate our jobs. And I feel like we need to be open to it, but also understand like it's not going to take our job. And I feel like if you position yourself, like you will be a very valuable HR person, like there's no way that AI technology is going to totally eliminate your job.
So there's a lot to unpack there, but let's start with, I guess, just the concept up top, right? That like from a vendor perspective, there's been lots of pushing of the technology into the HR realm. You've had some experience with this. Like, how do you evaluate a potential partnership in, I guess you call it, right? It's a flooded market.
Yeah. And it definitely is a flooded market. If you walk expos at conferences, I would say probably like 40 to 50% of it now is all AI technology, maybe more. And I would say definitely, first and foremost, you need to understand your business. And when I say that from an HR perspective, it's not just understanding your business from an HR perspective. If you want to be an effective HR leader, like you need to understand the business as a whole. And that's something that I always try to do anytime I join a company. Like, I want to understand my role, but I also want to understand how my role impacts other areas of the business. Because oftentimes when you're implementing AI technology, like it's going to impact not just HR. And if it's from an HR perspective, it's going to impact other areas of the business. So I think having a full understanding of that. Also vetting the software. Is this a software company that is brand new? Has it been around a while? Understanding, does this software fit my business today? And is it going to fit my business if my business doubles or triples? I think oftentimes people make a lot of short-sighted decisions, and I've seen it over the years, where it's like you decide on a technology or a software and, you know, it fits your business today, but then you're not thinking a couple years down the road, is this software going to be able to grow and support the company as we grow? Because there's a lot of money and time that gets spent in implementing different types of software solutions. And there's nothing worse than spending a ton of time on a project and then 3 years later, you're like, this doesn't fit anymore. And then also definitely diving into the ROI. So I feel like a lot of these software companies, and I see it because I've been through a lot of these sales pitches, it's we can save you, you know, $1.2 million. We can save you $300,000. And it goes back to my point of you really need to know your business because you should be calculating the ROI. Obviously, they can give you tips and help you with it. But I always get fearful when companies are like, we'll do the ROI calculation for you. And then they start throwing these random numbers. And it's, we'll even talk to your executive team about it. And I'm like, I can't even imagine like putting you in front of my executive team because you don't even know our business. Like they're going to poke holes in that. So I think it's really important to vet that and also get references. Like I've been through sales pitches. I've been through almost to the point where we're going to sign and they can't produce references that are similar to our business or who could talk to what exactly we need the software to do. So I think it's really hammering home, like spending a lot of time in that due diligence phase before you sign a contract.
Got it. So due diligence, understanding your business, figuring out your process. There's the understanding the potential vendor partner. And if you put it all together, you can create something that can work. But then I've also heard about leveraging pilots wherever you can. Try before you buy. Does that generally work? Has that worked for you? Or does it kind of depend on the use case?
It's a great idea in theory. What I oftentimes find is there are a lot of software companies that will offer you pilots, but it's oftentimes not live. Like it's kind of a sandbox type of like territory where you can't really fully see what it can do as it's integrated into your business. And that's where I found like I oftentimes struggle because I ran into situations, and I'm sure a lot of people experience this, where salespeople will tell you whatever, and they'll tell you, oh yeah, this software does this, it does that. And then it's like you get midway through the implementation and it's, no, actually it can't do that, or that's custom. And then they try to charge you for the development and stuff like that. And that's why I say, I think pilot programs are definitely helpful. And the more that you can see live, the better. But you also have to go into it knowing, like, it is very difficult to vet everything out, but I think it's important. Like, you don't want to skip that due diligence phase.
And then do you think that there's some things that are just, I don't know, are there some use cases or types of areas that are just really hard to do right and leads naturally to overpromising or and under delivering? Or is it really just in your experience about the specific partnership in question?
I think it's a mix of both. A lot of companies have very specific ways and processes that they do certain things. I'll give you an example, performance review process. Like, I ran into a situation where I didn't feel 100% about the performance module of the software. I knew going into it was probably going to be a little bit of a challenge, but I was a little surprised during the implementation of how hard it was to get the system to do something so simple. And I think that companies need to consider that when they're evaluating software, like, how firm are you on your existing process? Because a lot of times, like, you have to adapt, and sometimes you have to pivot and change to make things work. And then there's certain companies where they're just dead set on this is how it's going to be done. And then it obviously it's a big problem when the software solution can't do what you need it to do. And I think that I'm running into a lot of that in the market right now, where it's like, they lack the customization. And I think that if you're a company where you need customization, that's something you really need to vet in the process early on. But if you're not and you're looking for more of that out-of-the-box turnkey solution, then that works for you. But it just depends on, like, the specific processes of your business and how married you are to them.
I see. So then you mentioned ROI and how that's important to own yourself and understanding the nuances of the business versus something that's more generic. Can you tell me a little bit about at least your mental model for making these ROI cases to leadership? What are the inputs and the kind of the so what's that you go for?
Yeah. So most of my career, and I feel like I've been very successful with pushing big initiatives because I do spend so much time to figure out what the ROI is and really lay it out, where it's like when I'm coming to the executive team to spend money or to implement something, I've already thought through in terms of what are the benefits, what are the downfalls, so the pros and cons, what are the costs associated with it, when will we typically see the ROI, what are all the inputs or processes that go in, how am I measuring them, understanding like what is the expected outcome, but also taking a step further. And I found that obviously I was in an operations role heavily as well. Everybody wants technology and they want enhancements and stuff like that, but they come at a cost. So what are we getting from the cost? And oftentimes I'm laying out like, okay, we're going to free up this many hours a week, or we're going to free up this person, but then also coming with a plan in terms of this is now what I'm going to do with this person, or this is now what I'm going to do with this time, or I'm going to eliminate headcount. I feel like taking it so far like that has made it very easy for me to get things pushed through. Whereas I've seen other people, they struggle. It's this software is going to cost $57,000 a year. And then you have executives like, where are we getting this money? Why are we going to spend on it? What's the value? And that's why I think it's important to really be able to build that business case, because I think it makes it so much easier. But also understanding, maybe you go through the ROI process and you realize, and I actually ran into this, where the software looks so great, it looked like such a great solution, it was cutting edge, leading the market, but then I'm like, wait a minute, there's no ROI here, or the ROI is so minimal compared to the amount of work and stuff like that, and it's just, there's no justification for the cost. And sometimes that does happen too.
So you told me something that you just mentioned, something that's this next level, which is an ROI calculation typically says, look, we save this many hours or this many dollars. And that's usually expressed in time for personnel, right? Maybe there's other things about like outcomes, whether it's whatever it is, error reduction or compliance, which is just useful, or some kind of employee productivity benefit as well. But on the strictly on the HR team, it's typically about like hours saved, right? That it goes into the as the outcome. But then you're taking that a step further to say why the hours saved matter, not assuming that everyone thinks that itself is a goal, because why, after all, does the HR team get paid? It's to spend time doing things that is valuable, right? But then if you're going to save time, you're saying, but then here are things that is business aligned that we can do that is even more important that we're going to be able to do with that time. So the ROI isn't like this many hours saved, but it's these other things done without any new additional hiring.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you have to be careful. I mean, I ran into situations where I've had managers come to me and we had invested a bunch in enhancements, software development, that type of stuff. And they're still telling me that they're overloaded with their work and they need more headcount. And I'm like, but wait a minute, we've done all this. So there's something wrong there. So I think like being able to make that case of this is what we plan to save, and taking a step further and showing this is the value that we can bring to the business, and looking at more HR related activities that maybe have fell by the wayside that we could focus on. Or I feel like businesses are also changing so rapidly. And I think a lot of businesses want like that human connection still. So if we can free up our HR team, you know, where they're not doing these monotonous type tasks, what more can we add on their plate that is going to connect to the bottom line of the business or connect to our strategic goals of the business?
Yeah, there's so many different interrelated problems, right? So, and it's sometimes hard to pinpoint exactly what it is. So I feel like there's something there in that story. Can you tell me a little bit more about that manager? Or management investment, what was the initial thinking? And I imagine there's some kind of like software or technology solution that we thought would solve the problem, but maybe it was still there. So what was the initial thinking? And then how did that evolve? And maybe you can think of everything as an experiment along the way that worked or didn't work, but maybe the root cause itself was misdiagnosed, or how do you think about that?
Yeah, so obviously there were a lot of enhancements that were made in our ERP system, and we have an in-house team, but we also had consultants, and there's a lot of cost that's associated. And oftentimes when you're looking at those enhancements, like, you want to understand, what is the ROI? Is this worth our time and money? And having the manager fully understand or present what exactly is this change going to simplify, and taking it a step further. And one of the things we were seeing a number of enhancements being made, but it was like the business was not drastically changing in terms of sales, but the manager continually was like, I'm overloaded, my team's overloaded. So then I'm questioning, okay, what is going on here? We did these four things and this was supposed to reduce hours spent, and I'm going back into all the fine details of these projects. And for me, it was really a management issue. But also it made me kind of question, okay, maybe we need to dive deeper into your analysis. And that was a pain point I've learned over the years, is like, you can have teams do analysis of...
This has been a fantastic conversation so far. If you haven't already done so, make sure to join our community. We're building a network of the most forward-thinking HR and people operations professionals who are defining the future. I will personally be sharing news and ideas around how we can all thrive in the age of AI. You can find it at gocleary.com/cleary-community. Now back to the show.
Whether it's time studies, whether it's ROI and stuff like that, but it is really important. Like, you can't always take everything at face value, and you really need to, especially when there's a significant amount of money involved, you really have to take the time to go through that analysis and make sure, are they looking at every aspect? Are these calculations correct? I've seen issues where there's a formula error, and it's like, you know, when you're authorizing financial expenses or implementing something big that's going to disrupt the business, you want to make sure that you're doing it right and that you're spending money that is actually adding value. And for me, like, what I was seeing was maybe these weren't the right solutions. Like, maybe we weren't spending our time and money in the right areas. And it made me dive deeper into the specific management of that area. And obviously, it's a lesson learned. Like, you can't just blindly take everything. You have to dive in and make sure that that analysis is 100% accurate. And if you're not sure, then you need to make sure that you're asking the right questions to get to the bottom of that.
And which part of that involves like understanding how the business works, right? Or how that group is actually doing their like day-to-day activities that leads to this analysis and this set of concerns, which you're trying to solve for with some kind of process or software. Great point. So it's okay. Maybe you don't necessarily trust vendor math or manager math, and you want to ensure that you're double checking the work yourself and that it just makes sense. And now that we're in this age of AI, are all these things the same, or do you feel like it's all these cautions that you have, these lessons that you've learned from trying to improve outcomes and get to higher ROI and all these steps that we talked about in this age of AI, does it feel any different than, you know, I don't know, the age of SaaS or, you know, any kind of technologies like beforehand in terms of your process and or even like the challenges?
It certainly feels different. I think the more implementations you go through, the more sales pitches you go through, I think that there's a sense of, I don't know if jadedness is the right word. But as you go through these different experiences, you learn. Like, I went through a number of very large software implementations over the last couple of years. And while they all panned out at the end, for the most part, I did run into a number of hiccups. And for me, I've always tried to take those setbacks as like lessons learned. So like now every time I go into another software evaluation, I'm always like, I have in the back of my head, learn this the hard way, make sure you do this better. And I always try to do a postmortem anytime I do like an implementation of any sort, because I want to understand not just from my perspective, but also what my team has went through. Like what could we have done differently? What did we learn? What did we not vet properly? And then as we go through more and more of these implementations, we're in a much better mindset and much stronger in terms of hopefully really vetting them out better, but also being able to deliver exactly what we're intending to get.
Anything in particular that I know it's every, depending on what kind of project and the vendor and the context, it all can be very distinct. And you're talking about the processes that if you have that in place, it's helpful, but any particular other meta lessons or big ones that come to mind that you'd be willing to share?
Yeah. So I went through an experience earlier this year with a payroll vendor. It was payroll HRS, and it was a great system. I still love the system. The implementation process was horrible. And I learned a lot of lessons throughout it. One of the caveats, and every HR person, anytime you bring up payroll systems, we all have gripes about all of them. There is not a perfect payroll HRS system out there. But for me, I had a challenging implementation because there were a lot of things that were promised. And I was very smart about it in terms of getting things in writing. Like, I would not agree to sign the contract until I got certain specifics in there, because the certain specifics were, they depended upon our business. And for me, like, they were major deal breakers. If you can't do this, then this is not the software for us. And I should have known early on that this implementation was not going to go well. And I was smart about it. So one of the things I've learned in implementations is in any software agreements, don't pay a lot for implementation. Like, oftentimes when they quote you, they will throw like high numbers for, this is our implementation fee, or this is the cost of implementation. I've always negotiated them down substantially, because what I've learned is once you pay those big fees for implementation, they have you on the hook. But if you pay a lot less, they have more in the game than you do at that point. So it becomes easier from a negotiating factor as well as trying to get stuff done. And with this payroll provider, there were a lot of things, like there were delays in terms of starting implementation, which our business was dependent upon this system going live in January, because we had performance reviews, there were benefits involved. Like, there were a lot of moving pieces, and they had assured me, like, we're going to go live. And I knew it's probably not going to trend that way. And it got worse as the implementation was moving forward, because it was like, more and more things were getting dropped on us. I'll give you a quick example. So we were in two countries. We're in the United States and Canada. And one of the premises of this software move was I wanted a payroll system that could do both US and Canada in one system rather than running two standalone programs. They assured me throughout the process, we can do Canadian payroll, went through the demos, talked to a client. But one thing that wasn't disclosed to us was that they couldn't pay Canadian employees directly. They weren't set up yet. So we would have to export a file out of the system, then move it to our bank, who would then pay the Canadian employees directly. They dropped that on me, I guess, 4 weeks when we were supposed to go live, like 4 weeks before. And I'm like, wait a minute, it's not just I just send a file to the bank and then they just pay. There's a lot of stuff that's involved in terms of that. And it got to a point where I actually had to delay the project. Like I had to stop it essentially because there were a lot of things that were popping up that were like out of the scope of the original agreement. Even in like the learning management piece of it, they were trying to pass costs along to me. And I'm like, wait a minute, I have in writing like that you were paying for this. So it got to a point where I had to stop the project completely. And because we didn't spend that much in the implementation, we had a lot of negotiating power because they had so much more tied up into this implementation than we did. But it was a mess. I learned a lot from it. I still think it's a great system, but it taught me the importance of things that we probably should have vetted better upfront, as well as the importance of getting certain things in writing.
Great points. And now we're really talking about like contracting and in that detail, right? Yeah. In a true partnership, right, there should be skin in the game a little bit on both sides, right? It needs to be fair. And that's a great example of, you know, something at surface level, and even at level two, the answer is yes, we're aligned. But then, and even post pilot, when you're actually getting to an actual 4 weeks beforehand, you actually learn something where there's so many assumptions that were like made that there was not alignment on, or potentially was willfully hidden. I'm not sure. Yeah. But these are like all these pitfalls. But a common theme I'm sensing here is it really maps to your business processes, right? You need to understand like what matters and doesn't matter to your business. I don't know if you had a great bank and it's an automated process to just whatever it is you need to do to transfer the money and make it happen. That's one thing. But if you can't change banks because of many other reasons, that leads you to a black hole here, right? So it really is getting to as many detailed levels of understanding about what really matters and you're inflexible on versus what you could push forward on from a process perspective. Within this or many other projects, what are your tools to bring skeptical leaders alongside? So let's say you've done your own math. You feel like this is a project that like you want to move forward with, whatever it is, and you're looking to bring in, it could be leadership or it could be the management team. How do you bring them along?
Yeah. So oftentimes whenever I'm thinking or trying to solve a business problem, I'll oftentimes talk to the executive team. Hey, we have this issue, and really try to get their candid perspective in terms of what the actual issues are. Show them that I fully understand what the business issues are and really listen to them in terms of what are their concerns. If I start throwing out potential solutions, like, and they push back on it. And then I take that feedback and I'm going to do my own research. And oftentimes when I'm pitching certain things, I'm already taking into account that skepticism or their concerns and making sure that I'm addressing them so that they feel comfortable and that I'm not dismissing them or trying to forge ahead without their buy-in. Like I at least want to make sure that I take the time to address it. And I found that's very helpful in getting things pushed through and also finding advocates. Like certain times on the executive, there are certain people that are going to align with you. They're going to buy into what you're doing. So having them help to push things through, I find is very helpful. Like getting people on your team and getting them to buy in, because when they start to see like maybe certain other people that they have a lot of respect for are also sold on this, I think it becomes a lot easier to get people on board. And then also just making sure that you include the people in the process who are skeptical. If you go back to them and you address all their concerns and they're still skeptical, there's been times where I've set calls up with certain implementation people or subject matter experts to flush out those concerns and alleviate that if they're going to hold the process up from moving forward with a solution.
Love those tips. So let's circle back to something you brought up way up front, which was actually about how you think that with AI technologies, there are some processes that you feel like, especially in HR, you always want humans in the loop, right? So tell me a little bit about how you think about this. How do you think about how to bring in AI versus not?
So I think a lot of the lower level tasks, they talk about AI a lot in talent acquisition, and I think it's super helpful. And that is one area that I've definitely implemented AI with. But where I don't think it's a good idea is where it's making final hiring decisions. So I think definitely having it help through writing job descriptions, sorting through applicants, some of the candidate communications in terms of scheduling interviews or sending rejections, that type of stuff, I think is definitely helpful. But where I would never want to put AI is making final hiring decisions, because I feel like there's a lot that goes into making a hiring decision, and I would never fully feel comfortable having technology just make that decision. Even handling sensitive employee relations issues and stuff like that, I don't think AI technology should be involved in. I also anything with an ethical gray area, I would never, it's just me, I just wouldn't feel comfortable having AI technology. But I feel like it's very valuable for a lot of those lower level, low value type tasks and stuff like that. But also finding that balance, because I feel like I've seen it from employees, where they get frustrated if they think something's an AI response. If they get an email from someone and say they use ChatGPT or whatever to write it, it does not go well. I've also gotten pushback from employees that are my performance review was written by ChatGPT instead of my manager. So I feel you got to find a balance.
Yes. And those are great examples of the first one, the email depends on what the email is. But if it's you think you're talking to a human about a particular job issue and you feel like you get a robot thing back unexpectedly, or obviously performance management, that's something that is high stakes, and you want to, if you're going through the trouble of having this process, you're doing it for some reason, or if it's meaningless, maybe then, and go ahead, put in the AI in it, but then why have the process, one might ask. So I guess you're, even in these, I just want to push you a little bit more on these ethical kind of things, or so even in performance reviews or in hiring decisions, what do you think about AI technologies enabling you in the background to, I don't know, pull in a bunch of scores and give you some context to help make a hiring decision, or help a manager pull in a bunch of data around activities and time tracking information and performance 360 feedback to give you a starting point upon which then the trained manager, the trained HR person is supposed to take further action. Do you see risks even with that kind of approach?
I'm actually in support of a lot of that. I think where I see the risk is where I see certain managers who that's what they're going to rely on. They don't want to think. They're just going to say, okay, this looks great. Or, AI told me to make this decision, so I'm going to make it. So I think it just gets into knowing your workforce, but also training and the education of your management team. But I do feel like there is a lot of value in AI technology, especially I've done it where I'm dumping data into, an AI technology, and I'm summarize this, and it can spit it out very quickly, much quickly than years ago, where I was spending a ton of time trying to make the perfect summary or presentation on something. I think just the education of the managers, knowing your workforce, certain workforces, they're very innovative, very ahead when it comes to management development, stuff like that. And then there's others where, you probably need to spend some more time investing into that management team.
So then if you're looking ahead, if you a fool's errand, but let's try it, Jamie, in the next 2 or 3 years, what do you think a future ready HR team looks like for you?
So I would say finding that balance of human-centric leadership. I think that people still crave that human connection, and that's what I hear from a lot of employees. I don't think we should fully walk away from that. So it's finding finding that like mix, also having the tech savviness. I think technology is really, really valuable. And I think as HR professionals, we need to embrace it. We need to not be scared of it, not run away from it. And also just ensuring that we're also changing. Like I've noticed, I've been in the workforce now for about 18 years, and I've noticed over the last 10 years, things have dramatically changed. And I also see a lot of companies who are not adapting, are not doing well financially. And I think that that really speaks to it. And I think as HR professionals, if we want to position ourselves to be leaders in our area or industry, like we need to embrace change and we need to stay on top of it. Like it's no longer, you know, you get your HR certification and you're good. Every year I'm continually doing professional development because things are changing so rapidly.
Absolutely. So then do you think there's, I don't know, new skills that'll be emergent even more, or new titles even, or a mix? Is a mix of an HR team in, like, is that like in the skill sets, does that change a little bit as well, do you think?
Yeah, I think people analytics is huge. So like metrics was like the big buzzword, I remember, for a number of years. But now it's switching to analytics, which I think are so important. And I think that I'm seeing a lot more technology type roles. So whether it's AI managers, project management of AI product owners, that type of stuff, because it does require a certain skill set to be able to evaluate, implement these softwares and also run them. And there's a number of HRIS softwares where you actually need a team of people to run the day-to-day of them.
Yeah.
So I'm seeing a lot more technology capable type roles hitting the market over the last couple of years for sure. And I'm sure that's going to continue to grow.
Great. So thank you for this a wonderful conversation, Jamie. We've been really going in detail to the nitty-gritty of identifying a project, making sure that it actually aligns with the business overall, and then figuring out how to vet different vendors, an ROI case, doing the math yourself, including and double checking things alongside vendors and managers all the way before you actually can get some value. Thank you for sharing some of the failures along the way or setbacks that help you get lessons and get stronger. And there's some great negotiating tips in there as well. Yeah, like everyone has to feel like they have skin in the game, right? In a project that's involved in trying to get it successful. Thank you again. And for all the folks out there who are future-proofing their own organizations and their own HR functions, I hope you found some value in this conversation. And once again, we'll catch you on the next one. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Future Proof HR. If you like the discussion, make sure you leave us a 5-star review on the platform you're listening to or watching us on, or share this with a friend or colleague who may find value in the message. See you next time as we keep our pulse on how we can all thrive in the age of AI. Hey, it's Thomas again. One quick question before you go. Are you and your HR team tired of answering the same employee questions again and again in Slack? If yes, our Cleary AI-powered Slack bot is here to help. It takes routine employee requests and answers it automatically while freeing up time for you to take on more important tasks. At the same time, it automatically builds up an HR knowledge base as you go. It's quick to set up, works right in Slack, and you can try it for free. Just head on over to gocleary.com/HR-chatbot to install it. It's again, gocleary.com/HR-chatbot. Thanks again.